uppers they tossed down for butter cakes in the cellar room at Buttercake Dick's. Only 3 cents brought a satisfyingly crisp, hot biscuit filled with butter, and a cup of coffee besides. Where they could sit together at the scarred cherry tables and talk about the shows they had seen that evening, laughing and shoving, from the pits of the Olympic or the Chatham or the Broadway. Afterward, in ones and twos, they would wander out again in search of a place to sleep, ideally secluded and safe from any bored, drunken watchman looking to roust them for a bit of fun, or from a footpad who would turn their pockets out for the pennies. Drowsily, the boys navigated the crooked Dutch lanes that wound up from the Battery, where the high stone counting houses crowded the sidewalks, and where even now the new Merchants Exchange was rising on Wall Street, its white marble columns glowing pale in the dawn. They spilled out onto the great avenue, Broadway, its trim brick houses and expensive French shops brilliantly illuminated by gas lamps. From all over the city, they came to the corner of Spruce and Nassau Streets, converging on the offices of the Sun, where they gathered to await that morning's papers. For nearly 2 years, newsboys had hawked the Sun on the streets of the city, haunting its steamboat landings, marketplaces, busy corners, all the places where crowds congregated, especially the crowds, with clothing a bit more faded and frayed, those New Yorkers who had never before thought of themselves as newspaper readers. It was a new kind of selling for a new kind of newspaper. At the Sun's side door, the clerk collected their money and handed them down their bundles. The newsboys paid 67 cents for 100 papers, which left a profit of 33 cents if they could sell them all. They had to pay in cash up front, and they weren't allowed to return unsold papers. Mr. Day, the publisher of The Sun, had instituted that policy after he discovered that some of the boys were renting out papers to readers and then returning them to The Sun office carefully refolded for a refund at the end of the day. So they had to be careful about how many papers they chose to buy each morning. Thus, the more careful boys made sure first to open a copy to page 2, where the main news of the day was to be found, and scan it for a headline that could be yelled out on a street corner, one dramatic enough to make a passerby pause amid the noise and chaos of an outdoor market or ship landing. Murders were best, though their appeal depended on where the body had been found. The city's lower wards were serviceable, the upper ones less so, and the sixth, the poorest and most turbulent ward of all, the Bloody Sixth, as it would later come to be known, meant to keep moving on down the page. Fires were excellent, shipwrecks would suffice, and scandals among the upper classes, although relatively infrequent, could be stretched out for days before readers lost interest and again ignored the newsboys' cries. This particular morning, August 21, 1835, looked especially profitable. The first item, a brief reprint about astronomy taken from a paper in Scotland, was no good at all, but it was followed in quick succession by paragraphs headlined Fires. There had been three of them, the best at a brewery in the Five Points. Coroner's Office, an Englishman had accidentally walked off the dock at Broad Street and drowned, and A Narrow Escape from Death. The Navy frigate Constitution had nearly collided with a steamboat that had several of the ship's officers aboard. But none had as much sales potential as the story that led the second column, prefaced by the lines, How sharper than a serpent's tooth it is to have a graceless child. Mr. Locke, recently brought on as editor of The Sun, seemed to have an affection for Shakespeare. This story, which took up nearly the whole column, related the misfortunes of a prosperous gentleman from one of the state's western counties who had recently come to New York in search of his daughter. The girl had stolen $300 and a valuable gold watch from her parents and run away to the city with a young man. The couple had been spotted by a friend of the man's in a Greenwich Street boarding house, where they had apparently been posing as husband and wife. Mr. Locke was known to be one of the city's finest paragraphists, and he had been sure to note up front that the older man searching for the girl wasn't her actual father. The daughter, it is true, was the offspring of an indiscretion of her mother before she was married, and long prior to her first acquaintance with her present husband. But the knowledge of her mother's early imprudence